Welcome to the Meat Company.
You're listening to From the Butcher's Block with hosts Jason Hendrick and Michael Buckley, broadcasting from the Ventura Meat Company in Ventura, California.
We're here with Farmer John Fontaine of Rio Gozo Farm. In our previous segment, we were really kind of just getting into the meat of what, pun intended, getting into the meat of what Farmer John and his lovely wife Elizabeth are all about at Rio Gozo. We talked about some produce. We talked about the philosophy of the farm in general and kind of the educational aspects. But we led up to Portia and Hamlet, our tragedies, our Greek tragedies.
Right, our Greek tragedies.
But Portia and Hamlet are actually the hogs that you were raising, John, on the farm. The homestead aspect, we talked about the different acres you have and the primary acre being where you live. When we left off, though, we were kind of starting to talk about the, for lack of a better term, the ritual that you went through with your family prior to
I think that is the right term.
Excellent. I was unsure. You know, there's so many different perspectives out there on this process, but the ritual you went through with your family leading up to the slaughter of Portia and Hamlet and the processing. So I want to get back to that and kind of understand where you're coming from and what you conveyed to your family.
So one thing that was really important to one member of our family, my son, who had been around for the raising of the pigs, was that he was there.
And how old is your son?
He's 11.
Okay.
He just turned 11 at the tail end of January. And it was really important to him to be there. Mm. He really wanted to see it. Now, he's been exposed. We live trap animals on the farm. We do all kinds of things to protect our food from,
you know,
varmints. Mm-hmm. And we do. It's a squirrel will keep eating. It doesn't matter if your baby's starving.
I'm sorry.
It doesn't care. So right. You might care, but it don't.
Yeah.
You know? I've always tried to be really honest with him about it. You know, I wanted, again, back to the fear and the shame aspect like these things that,
so
you know,
prevalent.
So it's, I didn't want him to think like my dad is this evil guy that like, you know, kills things like
needlessly.
All the time and needlessly. And I wanted to speak to him about it and have him understand that, you know, you have to come to grips with that yourself, you know, and I would rather be the person on the front end of that than like having to come to grips with it through the styrofoam and plastic wrap and all of that. So when it came time to do the pigs, my son's been studying like anatomy in his middle school.
Sure.
And pigs, I don't know how many people, but on the inside, they're essentially the exact same thing as a human.
Well,
all
even
the organs are lined up. Mm-hmm. Everything is.
And Michael, even from the outside, my experience after the pigs are slaughtered, I was able to be on the farm with John and the hide, the flesh, the skin was, it's like a fat person. I can't think of any better way to describe it. So if you're offended by it, sorry. It's like hugging a fat grandmother because it gave, it moved, and it really kind of molded around my hands as I was working my fingers through it.
Yeah.
And the hair was soft as a unit. It was very soft, even though each individual hair was kind of coarse and wiry. But it was really, I thought I was going to be more anxious and more resistant to this process than I ended up being. So it took me a couple of minutes, chatting with you, John, to get up the gumption to actually reach down and touch the pelt.
Mm-hmm.
But once I did, I was so intrigued because it was really like touching the flesh of another person.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, to an extent, they're living creatures that are moving around.
It was so human-like.
Intelligent. Yeah. I one of the powerful things for us is, so, like, you put the pigs down. We shot them with a 9mm hollow point in the back of the head. And it was really important for us. And the first shot was absolutely brilliant. You guys will forgive my calling things like that if you're out there in the
it's
world
important.
And this offends you. It really was brilliant. It was really very, very well done. It was absolutely, I mean, if it was me, I would like to go that quickly and that serenely. Mm-hmm. But you try to hit where the spinal column meets the brainstem. So you shut down all the organs from a nervous and as fast as possible.
And now, the reason for doing that, sorry, Jason.
No, go ahead.
Is it's actually manifold. You know,
it's
more than one reason. And it's not just, of course, the most important thing is to minimize any, you know,
stress
and things like that. But the meat quality mm-hmm. is greatly affected by the amount of stress the animal mm-hmm. experiences during this process. And the more you can minimize that, the better quality of meat you're going to have.
Well, absolutely.
Before we get too much further, though, we've used the perspective about offending people or feeling offended or shamed. We lost a little bit of track, John, and just because I feel it's important. What you sat around with your family beforehand, mm-hmm. We missed out on what I felt was a really divine way of conveying this process. Tell the mm-hmm. listeners what you told me about your campfire session.
So we started a campfire in the morning because, you know, fire is always like an excellent way to like begin ritual or provide sacred space. It's something we've done as humans forever.
Eons.
You know, forever. We gather around the fire and then all of a sudden it's powerful and almost semi-religious. Mm-hmm. So we had like a really great moment, and I was talking to my son and I was talking to my nephew who was also there, mm-hmm. and the whole family was gathered around, and we had a few moments of silence to just think about our experience with them and where they were at. And then what I really wanted to convey to the kids was like, you are welcome to touch every part of this animal, to explore them. There's nothing macabre about that. But you may not make jokes with them. Mm. If you want to see what the inside of their mouth looks like, open it up, explore it from a scientific level. Mm. But don't make them talk. Don't make fun of them. There's an element to this sacrifice that you really have to kind of bookend. Yeah. I was comfortable with, like, if he wants to pull the intestines all the way out and see how far they are. This is science. This is not like, this is not some kind of like mass murderer's traits. This is understanding a system. They have almost the exact same intestinal tract. Yeah. To investigate it in that way is to understand your own body.
And as a family, this was your first raising of animals for slaughter for food, right?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, so you're learning this together, but you're setting the foundation and the groundwork of why it's important and how it should be treated moving forward.
Right. You know? I mean, and honestly, I'm talking to myself in that situation as much as I am him.
So you're kind of talking yourself up.
Right. I'm trying to divine my own sense of like what this is to take life and to harvest life and to move through all of that. I mean, it's always, you know, when you're older and you're like an older man, it's easy to have bravado, like, yeah, you just kill the thing and then you cut it and then you eat it. Who doesn't like bacon? But, you know, I mean, I got thoughts, I got emotions, I got conscience. I want it to have meaning. I want it to be something that's you know, above and beyond just like this bacon tastes great.
Right, sure.
And I wanted to empower that with my son. I'll tell you another thing that was fascinating about it was that my father-in-law has a porcine valve in his heart, which is to say that they took a valve from a pig heart and put it in his chest. And the reason he's alive now is because of this valve. Yeah. So we were able to remove the heart from the pig. It was still beating, though it had been dead for like 10 minutes.
Okay.
It was just like nervously still beating, which was also, it's glistening and like beautiful and just like, I mean, as much as you could ever appreciate the engine of an automobile or something that's magnificently designed, this thing is crafted, you know, hundreds of thousands of years into this perfect system, you know. And so we're like looking at the heart and looking at the nephew and looking at my son and saying, you know, grandpa is here because of this part.
So you're able to actually point out and show an appreciation
this part, right,
for the physical
here
component
on the
of the heart.
Yeah. That's what saved his life. That's why he's here right now. This thing you're holding in your hand, we were able to use this, and that's just another form of harvesting the animal. In that case, that we needed the valve. In other cases, we needed the pork chop.
Right.
In other cases, we needed this. And so it was like they could see the open insides of the animal, pull the heart out, and then it would like ethereally transfer to their grandfather's chest, a portion in there. It's like that kind of shit is like cosmic.
Well, how did they take on the gravity of that? How did they absorb?
I can't take on the gravity of it. I wasn't even there.
How did they absorb that information?
They're kids, so they're kind of blinky in the beginning, like, oh, okay, whatever. But they're really tactile about the exploration, so they want to know. Then on the second one, we pulled it out with the heart attached to the lungs, attached to all the liver and the rest of the systems. We're like, check this out. Look at that. This is how it all works. So the oxygen comes in here and it moves here. And it's like, honestly, for me too, even though I understand those systems and I've taken anatomy classes and all of those things, actually seeing them in real time and knowing that they're lined up exactly as humans are on the inside.
Sure. It's laid out the way it's supposed to be.
It's like, wow, man. It was like, wow, man.
Yeah.
You know? And then the other thing that I'll say, that the most important thing to me was not to waste it. Like, the thing I would have felt the worst about is I raised these two animals. They look really good.
Yeah.
I cut them down. I skinned them. I did everything associated with it. And then I was just too lazy to process it. Or right. I was too ignorant to care.
Well,
or I just started cutting it apart because I don't freaking know. It's like, dude, a year later, honestly, about a couple grand in food.
Yeah.
And Michael, I'd like to get your perspective on this because you deal from a financial aspect right. with waste every day.
Yeah.
You're always crunching those numbers and you're evaluating that.
It's a numbers game.
It is a numbers game. John, obviously you're not selling off this meat.
Yeah.
But Michael, what is it like to look at meat on the table and try to be as creative and as resourceful as you can? Does that translate?
I'm glad that the financial aspect keeps the onus on us not to be wasteful.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing that we want to do, and this is very important actually, the last thing that we want to do is to try and use our prices to absorb waste.
Mm.
It'd be easy to do that.
Mm-hmm, sure.
The better thing to do is to try and, like you say, be resourceful and help people understand that there are ways to use just about 100% of this.
You absolutely. Know,
within a few pounds, I mean, and we're finding out new ways to do it. You know, when we first started breaking beef here, we had a little bit of a hard time getting the bones sold. You know, there weren't enough really wholesale opportunities there. So we had some accumulation, but, you know, we're determined and we're resourceful. And now, you know, pound for pound, bones are one of our best sellers, and it makes me feel so good to know that when we bring in a carcass that, you know, is somewhere around 600 pounds,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, at the end of the day or the week or however long it takes us to get that animal sold, that we're just about to zero waste, and that feels fantastic. And you know, the financial aspect keeps the onus on us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that it does.
Now,
I am.
Without getting too far ahead of ourselves, Johnny, walk us through the process a little bit. So you take Portia down initially, mm-hmm. with a 9mm. She drops quickly. You do Hamlet next.
Hamlet doesn't even move. That's how quickly and beautifully she went down. He's continuing to eat. Their last meal was a Hubbard squash with a piece of birthday cake and a little bit of romaine lettuce. Mm.
And that sounds like a delicious ending.
I'm saying, man, you know, and he hardly moved. And then what happened, you just let it rest for a second. You just kind of like wait for a while.
Take a breath.
Yeah, just, okay, there it is. Man. All right. You know, and then you take a look around and you go, okay, we're about to start the second part of the process, which is the gut and the entrail dump.
And do you feel like you're gonna use this them. Is the kind of the first step of what we were just talking about is understanding what can be used, what can't be used, and being resourceful? Is the initial gutting of the animal the first step in that journey?
Yeah, and to be honest, I wish we had done more with it. But to also be honest, we were ignorant.
Yeah.
I have butchered animals before. I've never dealt with anything that size.
Yeah.
I've never dealt with cuts that were that delicate.
What were they pound wise?
They dressed at like 170. Mm. They came in at like 210. Mm. So they're not like even that massive. Mm. If you've ever hauled anything that's just 170 pounds of dead weight, and I mean, I lift stuff all day long.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you're like, oh, okay, you know what I'll do? I'll just lift this thing up and I'll hold. No, you're not.
No.
No. Mm. It's like without the life force energy in it, that thing is just like, it's cement.
Well, the word dead is apt, right?
Sure.
Absolute dead weight. Mm. And so, you know, it's like one of those things where you're just like so involved in, you know, basically the whole process of it.
I'm enamored.
We wanted to use the entrails to stuff our own sausage, but every time you scratch the surface of what to do with this animal, you're talking about 50, 100, you know, several thousand years of study on how to cure a leg.
Sure.
Right? How to make prosciutto.
It's deep science.
It's not like It's not like, oh, you know what? You just get some salt, yeah, and then you just hang it up. You know, it's like, I mean, why? You're going to wait 2 years to eat this thing?
Yeah,
you better freaking know what you're doing.
Exactly, and I think that speaks a lot about the foundation of the Insert Meat Company and butcher shops across the nation and the world, for that matter. As a craft, there's centuries of refinement and skill that have been passed on.
We're standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Because you see that kind of interaction with your customers every day of really being the person they lean to for information and knowledge.
Yep.
And you better know, just like Johnny's conveying, you need better know what to give back to them. You better know what the cut is or how to use it or how long they can leave it in their fridge.
Yeah. No, that, I mean, and there's so many variables too. You know, I mean, shelf life.
Right.
That's a science in and of itself. Right.
Oh, yeah. I
mean, how long were you driving around in your car? You know, things to keep in mind, you know, the danger zone for bacteria growth being between 70 degrees and 125 degrees. Well, did it get into that domain? And if so, for how long?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so the sticker that, you know, the grocery store loves to put on your little package there, well, it feels nice and cozy, but it is not an exact science.
Yeah. And Johnny, for anyone who's ever seen the movie Into the Wild, there's that scene, that segment of the movie where he's on the verge of starvation. He has to find an animal. He has to kill an animal. He finally kills a moose.
Right.
And to your point, he's ignorant of what to do with it. He has notes and spoke with trappers and that prior to his camping and excursion, but he really didn't have any expertise.
Jeez, no way.
How quickly did you have to move? I mean, he ended up wasting that whole moose.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, the coyotes ended up.
You got to work fast.
How fast did you have to go?
So we iced him for a couple of days just to let him break down a little bit. And I was concerned, and again, this is just my ignorance. I was concerned that rigor would set in and we wouldn't be able to split it. Like just that the legs and all the limbs would like completely lock. They didn't. Maybe it's because it was gutted.
So all you did initially was describe kind of what the initial breakdown then was.
Okay.
Because when you say split it, that to me speaks to the animal still largely being whole.
Okay. So you kill the animal, then you gut it. If you're going to keep the innards or offal for something like that, then you would go immediately to ice or preservation. Mm-hmm. We did not. We dug a pit in an area near a tree. And we put the innards in there. Then we took them over, and you cut a little hole where the Achilles tendon meets the foot. Yeah, right on the back of your leg or its leg. And then you put a piece of wood or a dowel through it, and you haul it up
on a tree limb or
anything large. Yeah, I mean, if you were at home and you had a way to pull engines out, those old winches and lifts or great too.
Okay.
You want to sever the artery at that point and bleed it out. Not so much. I mean, in my experience, and please jump in at any point because again, I'm completely like new to this. But my experience of it was like we wanted to use aspects of the lard, and without having the blood like gone to, you end up pinking the lard.
Okay.
So when you go to make lard, there's actually a tinting
of the fat and the lard in the body you don't drain the blood.
Yeah. I'm not even sure if it's medically bad. It's just like when we were making, or if it's like bad for you or something. But when we were making lard for like pie crust, we want it like you use lard. A lot of the old school pies, they use lard, like pork lard in them. Yeah,
it's the best way to make a tortilla.
It bonds. It tastes phenomenal. It has the right temperature spectrum on it. It's perfect. But it can't be pink.
No, white.
So you want to drain them out. So we did that. We turned them up and drained them out into a bucket. We didn't save the blood, but I know there's a lot of people that do for both blood sausage.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, I don't know how many people know this, it makes a great stain for concrete. It makes like a maroon colored rust kind of. It was used with concretes and staining tiles and stuff like that. A long time ago. It was just like, because it activates up. Maybe it's the iron in it. I don't really know.
Yeah, right. Sounds.
But we didn't save it. So then we took the head off whole, and then we put that on ice because we knew we wanted to harvest a bunch of stuff off
it. Sure, yeah.
And then you slowly start to work the flesh off of where you've cut the legs off, and you pull it down just like you would a jacket or a vest, or if you've ever slaughtered rabbits, they call it pulling their pajamas off. Mm. So you cut them around the sides, and when you pull on the side, it comes off all in one. And then there's this marvelous creature underneath, like coated in lard and like just so perfect. You can't believe that anything. It's like peeling the perfect apple or something.
Yeah.
And there it is in just majesty, just kind of like hanging and open and just like, you know, and you can see, you can see all the webbing of lard too, like in here. To where it was like super fat, like you could see all the webbing, like from here to here, you know, like there's no open
space.
Yeah,
we're kind of just learning about that. That's referred to as the caul fat, right?
Again, these are like we're like paging through our shirt.
And here's Michael whipping it out, like
I actually just recently learned about that myself.
Yeah, I'm cutting
my teeth too.
So we did that, and then we hung them, and then we got the skin off. And one of the things for the skin too is you kind of cut two handholds into the actual pelt, and then one person pulls on it with like a certain amount of gravity, and then you take a boning knife and you're just barely even making movement.
Right.
You're not cutting anything. You're just it's almost like a wish to get it. It just like it just opens up, and the more you're like right on it like that, the more it's just like kind of unwrapping.
Does it give away pretty easily? I mean, does it really kind of just with a certain
Once
amount of pressure,
off the shoulders, it does.
Okay.
And then it hitches again towards where...
So there's some points...
Well, it would be the front leg. So once it comes off the back and you've cleaned it from all like the... back fat and all of that and pulled it off that way.
Back fat is a key component to Canadian bacon and all the delicious bits back. So.
And tallow for candles and soap.
Yeah.
There's like three types of, you know, who knew this? There's like three types of fat on the back of the pig, and all three types of fat have a very specific use.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I'm like, well, this one looks, I mean, it's a nice bit of fat. She's like, oh, you can't use that for soap.
Right.
I was like, well, why not? I mean, it's a, you know, the thing. She's like, well, first of all.
She's
and secondly and thirdly it's just like okay, cool. So and then, you know, we get them down, so you pull them off the dowel and then you set them down, and then we put them in ice chest and filled them with ice all over, and the trotters and the shanks and everything were off, so we could start to like pickle those immediately and get used to or get ready to salt them and cure them. Mm-hmm. And then we did the second one. Mm. And I gotta say, as far as the cuts go, like the first one was definitely like drunken Sopranos kind of like cutting. I am so embarrassed. I'm so fucking happy you were not there and that there was no camera to watch me like sawzall this beautiful animal together, only to discover that like, wait, that's not a picnic ham.
Right.
That's a baby back.
Right.
You know?
Let's talk about that for a second, Michael.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found, because I had opportunity after the initial slaughtering, to help John break down some of the trotters and actually the head. And we'll save the details of that for later. Mm. But we were sharpening the damn knives.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Every few slices.
Oh, you have to,
Yep.
Is that, how does that play into carving up an animal or meat for dispersal?
So in the realm of a business, it becomes an even different concept because the word efficiency creeps its head up.
Dull knives.
Yeah, it's going to take you longer. Mm-hmm. And if whether it's me or whether it's Megan or Anthony or Chris, it doesn't matter. The knives have to be sharp so that we can be efficient and that we can get through this. I mean, there's so many variables. I mean, you can feel in here right now, what are we, probably at 67, 68 degrees in here? Well, that's, you don't want meat to reach that to be in that temperature zone for very long.
Once it hits the table, you want to be moving and
you
want to
get
and,
it cut and you want to get it back in the fridge. So sharp knives are of the utmost importance.
Safety-wise, too, right? Because the dull knife is the
person.
That's how you lose fingers.
Because you're going to have to apply force.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you probably learned this, man. You got a good edge on your blade.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to apply anything.
No, that thing should just
one
render.
Thing butchery, and you probably learned this, was the part you're trying to take off wants to come off.
Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, man. That was the... I swear to God, man. I got in there on the leg, and I was just working, and I'm like, well, this muscle just kind of, and then there's this microfascia in between, and just like a little pull on it, and then the whole.
Rudimentary cuts you were making initially, there's a certain forgiveness that the animal was able to provide.
I would say
as you got into the muscular structure.
God on the first one. By the second one, I was able to take it down in a clinical way to like pelvis, and I felt better. But I mean, the first time you're sort of like, you look at your computer and you're like, okay, that's and then you hold your sawzall and you're like, wow, I've really never saw through bone and like matter and stuff like that.
It's like circa 2009.
It's not what your saw was intended for initially.
It was the first use on the saw too. I swear to God,
my saw's all sitting
right there. I saw it when it came in.
A new saw specifically for this purpose.
We got a brand new blade. I got a brand new saw for it. But I swear, every time I limb the plums now, I'm gonna be like, it's gonna have a little macabre kind of feeling to it.
A whole new angle of appreciation.
Yeah, and when, I mean, so there's the theoretical, like, okay, this is flesh and I'm going to take it apart. There's a tiny bit of the physical, but like as soon as like marrow hits you in the sunglasses, you're there.
Oh, gosh.
You bet, because you're not going to walk, you're not going to put your saws all down and walk away like, ooh, that's gross. Okay, forget it.
It's no,
all,
you're in.
Dude, you,
you're
I the, mean, you need in. To finish right now.
And for the respect of the animal, you this process is far from done.
If you raise, I submit unless, you know, you've got, you know, that it's difficult for you on like a relation. I submit that if you raise an animal and then you put it down yourself with the notion of eating it, there's nothing that will compel you to waste it. I mean, you can't believe the involvement. Like you can't, it's just like, I can't, it doesn't matter. It's sort of like everyone's watching.
Right.
You know, kind of thing.
Even it's if like, it's by yourself, everyone's watching.
Yeah, and in my own mind, it's like, Fontaine, man, you took like almost a year, a little more than a year to get this thing going. Numerous times I'd come in and feed them. They would break their water thing. I'd be up in the middle of the night because there's water gushing out of a thing. Put my headlamp on. Go down there. Fix it for them. Shove them away as they snurfled at me in the middle of the night. And I'm like, you know, in like pig manure and like everything of it, you know. And thinking like, it's really important that they have fresh water.
Yeah.
They need to drink 2 gallons of, I like read a bunch of them. They drink between 2 and 4 gallons of water every single day. If you're not giving them 2 gallons of water, you're being negligent. That's cruelty. That's not just like poor practice. Mm. That's cruelty. That's like they should rescue the pigs if you cannot get them food and water
to
that,
that
extent.
100%.
Whether you're
going
to eat them later or not, I mean, you have an obligation.
What the end result is.
That's right.
Interesting. Wow. Well, I'm not gonna shut us down. We initially scheduled till 9 o'clock. We got still a little late, and I'm in the depths of this conversation. Dude, use your phrase
I'm
earlier.
Elbows deep, man.
So we're gonna keep going. For anyone who's listening live, again, this is the Ventura Meat Company. We're broadcasting from the Butcher's Blocks live in this shop.
So I have a question. Mm-hmm. We had 2 pigs.
Yeah.
And I understand that the first one obviously was an education.
Right.
What did you learn? And what did you do differently when you got to number 2?
It's really great because I started to understand, like we were just talking about, how beautifully they're put together.
Yeah.
And how simply it was to separate them with like a blade or go in, like you're trying to take the leg off because you want to make salam iberico or something like that, right? So you get in on the joint, like well, the first time you're in there, you're like, this leg doesn't seem like it would ever come off at all. And then like you kind of work in your knife,
right?
And then you get to the seam and you're like, oh, whoa, that's the joint. And then you just tuck your blade in, you work it like twice and the tendons flip and then the thing butterflies open, like the whole pelvis opens up. And, you know, because the first time when you kill them and they're like all whole, the legs are kind of like clamped together like this.
That, right? Yeah.
But the more that you work them on the inside to get that leg off, then they start to open up. And the other thing was like, so on the first one, I'm like cutting and then I cut it and I take so much mass off of one side, it becomes uneven. Mm. It's not steady on the table anymore. And what we realized on the second was like, you take a portion here and then you take another portion here.
So you're
and
balancing
all the weight
equally.
Just keeps working on the table like this all the way until it's like all you're left with is basically the pelvis on the back end.
Yeah.
Because the ribs have come off.
Yeah. So did you find yourself slowing down on the second pig too? Like physical speed of working the blade?
We put on music and stuff. We were like, now this is the part where, because the first one was just like, we got to get rid of the body before the authorities find us, you know? And the second one was like, you know, Dexter. Yeah, something like that, you know, like you felt like there should be some kind of like symphony music behind you as you like, you know. So
interesting. Wow. Yeah. If for anyone out there who wants to weigh in and has questions, again, we're going to extend this segment because I'm too engrossed. Make sure to send your questions either to Twitter or Facebook to hashtag Butcher's Block Show. And we'll try to get Johnny some questions to answer here in a few minutes.
I mean, I'd be surprised if people didn't have questions. I've got it. It's like when we talked with Steve, you know, it's like,
this is a previous segment. A lot of education comes through the cellophane and the styrofoam tray.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, I was that guy for a long time. That's no education at all.
Right.
Now that we're really getting into kind of the nitty gritty details, my eyes are opening up to the possibilities of, you know, what each cut could mean and that respect component you were talking about.
Yeah.
So you're working the pig, though. You're getting the pelvis opened up. You're kind of working through your different cuts. You put the pig on both pigs on ice, but you have some other components that you have to deal with, right?
So sure.
The head that came off and the trotters, Elizabeth put us to work, Michael. You should have been there. That was a sight to see.
Oh, yeah.
But what was your feeling... One, when the head came off, when you had to physically remove the head, but also once you had to revisit the head to really remove as much meat and be as efficient and as to not be as wasteful as you could be.
Sure.
What was your feeling when you had to revisit that component?
Yeah, it's, you know, always with the head, it's got so much more emotion.
They've looked at you.
Yeah, and, you know, there's like... And I mean, pigs are cute. I mean, you can
for a while,
ask,
right?
Like, yeah. I mean, no, they're just cute. Even when they're fat, they're cute, you know, or like dangerous. They just leave a snurf and, you know, and they got like big fuzzy eyes and everything like that, you know. And so that part's a little. And then the embarrassed part of me that's like such a Westerner is like, what does this all look like with the skin under, you know, underneath?
Sure.
Like, what am I? Because it's like, oh my God, this, you know, this meat is near its mouth, which is gross. So you wouldn't eat it. But it's not. It's just like meat. I mean, there's meat over here and there's meat over here. There's like a bunch of different applications to it.
This is some of the most prized meat on the whole carcass. Dang.
I mean, I used to go and squeeze their little jowls and I thought like, that's a business there. Yeah, just put some business on there, you know? But then when you pull it off too, it does seem sort of ghostly. Mm. But again, it's sort of like what was that? They had like a thing that was going around in museums, like body.
Oh yeah, right.
And it was really easy to go to that
Body Works
or where they would like slice
ever
the
go
brain.
To that.
Or, yeah, sketchy.
Good grief!
Yeah,
I did that.
It leaves an impression. Terrible. I went to that exhibit one time, and it's really shockingly artistic, but also you scrunch your face because you're looking at it going that. Was a living person.
That's right. What's hard is like without the connect. It's again. It's like walking through the butcher, you know, part in Vons or something.
Yeah,
forget me, Vons or whoever. You know.
Yeah.
And you're walking through it, and you're like, there's no attachment to that. That was actually an animal. Now it's just like it's just a ribeye.
It may as well be a box of Cheerios.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's as if it was
Cheerios.
Yeah, sorry Cheerios.
I don't think there'll be a sponsor.
It's as if it was stamped out. You know, like it was just kind of like.
Well, how many times have we seen that in a cartoon or in a, you know, a sketch, where it's a mold?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the McDonald's. McRib.
Right.
I used to love that as a kid, but that's literally
it's not the rib.
There ain't no rib.
It to look like a
there's no rib in it at all. Yeah.
Because that's what people want to feel good about.
Right. Yeah. And they want. So, but I mean, if they're like, you know, your rib's name was Ed, You're like,
yeah.
Although to me, it's like, well, somebody cared enough about him to give him a name.
Yeah.
It's probably pretty, you know, pretty good.
Sure.
I want to say that and maybe, you know, maybe this resonates with you too. I want to say that intention and attention seriously affect the end product. So I want to say that, like, when I really care about what I'm raising, like if I go through and I'm picking a bunch of arugula for like a particular caterer that I like,
right?
That feels like really, there's somebody that I,
you're connected with that person
with me. I pick it with like a sense of joy or interest that I really, and maybe this is the Ojai in me, I feel is like imbued in the overall like terroir of what you're eating.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting you say that because Michael, I'm gonna dance on the fence top between a pit of alligators and a pit of poisonous snakes. But what, Johnny, for what you're describing to me right now, really pokes at the heart of the debate when it comes to vegetarians and meat eaters.
Sure,
because you're the way you just described the arugula is the same as you said intention and attention you gave the pigs.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you want to be a vegetarian, do your thing. I've to use the old cliche, I have vegetarian friends.
Right, yeah.
I like the dishes they eat. I respect their lifestyle.
I have sold a lot of bacon to a lot of vegetarians.
Yeah,
but for the record.
It's the gateway.
But at the heart of what you were describing, to me that's that energy of harvest, that living organism, whether it's conscious living organism or not, and I would argue that plants have a conscious tie to the energy of the world anyway.
Sure.
Your phrase to me just rang so eloquently. Intention and attention affects the end product, and the love that you were talking about with the arugula is the same love that you were giving with the animals.
And I was going to ask you about that, you know, when you were talking about, you know, the gun and all that, and because what we're talking about here is the word harvest.
Mm-hmm.
We're harvesting livestock as opposed to, you know, whatever terminology you'd apply to vegetables. The same care can be given. Is it always given? Well, no, not always. But the same can be true for vegetables.
Sure.
Let's face it, there is an industrial aspect to vegetable production.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're the biggest polluters. I mean, agriculture's biggest polluter, one of the biggest issues.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it leads to a lot of monoculture and things like that. And
sure.
You know, so we're really, really here at the Ventura Meat Company trying to get that pendulum to swing back the other way and go, you know, people who raise livestock for human consumption are not evil people. They're not inherently evil. We learned that when we talked to Steve, you know, because my feelings about grass-fed beef and things are so strong that I don't, maybe I do look down my nose at people who finish their cows on grains at all, even if they don't send them to a feedlot. I'm still kind of like, you don't have to do that to get a cow to taste good. But Steve, you know, taught me to go, you know, that's just the way they do business. It's not, they're not coming at it from a cruel perspective or anything. So
they're just moving units. They're moving units.
It's totally that.
And you know what? It tastes like they're moving units. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It tastes like they're moving units.
As Michael, you reiterate all the time, people vote with their dollar.
Bingo.
And people vote with their choice. And in this discussion we're having today, Johnny, you voted with your choice to raise pigs for your family's consumption.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I didn't get, if I were to break it down, it would have been cheaper for me to buy those pigs cut.
No doubt.
Without raising them or anything else.
But the experience you're able to share with your family and with yourself 10 years from now of, hey, I, as a farmer, endorsed this practice of how I raise my vegetables and my produce, but I imparted that to how I raise my pigs. And I don't know if I could vouch for you. I would say you're taking that away as a plus on the gain side of what you've gone through now. That's going to apply to so many other areas of your life.
If I have a narrative around my food that connects me to it, it's greater than the amount of time it took me to consume and eliminate it. It sustains me further.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just like a protein exchange.
Yeah, man.
It was an experience for me. Just like any, you know, every, so like whether in 3 years when I'm not eating Hamlet and Porsche anymore, you know, because our freezer is really full.
I bet.
When I'm not doing that, there's still the narrative, energetic aspect to it that it that does sustain me, that does feed me, that, you know.
And as you alluded to, the Hamlet and Portia are still giving back to you. There's no way you could have consumed all that meat this quickly. So tell us a little bit before we close out today in this evening's segment about...
One question I wanted to make sure I asked before you put a bow on this. We talked a little bit about marbling and your attempts to not only retain some marbling but also enhance it through a finishing. Were you satisfied with the marbling?
I mean, I have to say, and I was worried it would not be the case, it is the best pork I have ever eaten in my entire life. Like, I want to say that going into it, my wife and I are very, like, you know, what we think is good is what we think is good. I'm not saying that everyone else has to agree or whatever, but I got a little food snobbery in me, you know? Hey, and I set myself up for man, all this work, all this stuff, this pig's going to taste like shit and it's going to be a totally fucked adventure, you know? Happy anniversary, bitch. You know? And then, I was set like that. Both of us, like our palate bars were like set, like disappoint me. Nope.
Yeah. Awesome.
So what have you consumed so far?
Yeah, tell us what's in the freezer.
We've done one side of bacon.
All right.
And what I will say on that is that I salted it, and then we smoked it.
Of course.
And I would say if you do that, I would recommend poaching it a tiny bit to pull some of those salts off it.
Okay.
So if you're going to mix like a good thick cut side off a rasher into like... beans or something like that, it probably wouldn't have to be soaked or poached or anything like that. If you were trying to eat it on the side with eggs and stuff like that, I would recommend that. We did the sausages, which was like a whole other adventure. I literally, my wife is like, I'm going to totally stuff all these sausages. She came here, by the way, for the linings and stuff. Thank you very much.
Winner.
She got her KitchenAid, grinder. So I leave, and, it's like 6 o'clock in the morning. Bye, honey. I'll see you later. I'm going to the farm to, pick vegetables. And she's, sitting on the counter, mashing meat through the KitchenAid thing, right? So then I come back around 1, get my lunch and, get, a drink and stuff like that. She's still just, literally come back at, 4 or 5, same thing.
Same position.
Yeah. And then she's like seal-a-mealing everything. I love this thing. It was I suddenly was transported to an 80s infomercial, but I was sham-wowed too.
Weren't we all?
Just and she had them all labeled and everything, And I was like, doesn't the lining rip? She's like, yes. Well, you have to be very careful.
Sometimes.
It does.
Megan can tell you about that.
It's just she was able to weave it through. She did a pinwheel. A straight long one, and then pinwheeled it with kebab skewers.
Very nice.
Cooked really, gotta say, it cooks really great because it doesn't, because of the way that it's sort of contracted on the kebab spears, it'll stretch, but it still holds, so it doesn't split, and you can really brown it really nicely.
Yeah.
And then you pull the kebab spears off it, and you can cut it into quarters if you want. Yeah. You can do whatever, but she's like, honey, I'm so tired of pinching, twisting, the whole thing, I don't know how you guys do it, and why do this when I could just roll out a 2-foot sausage and you could just grill it? I'm like, well, I like both, just for the record.
Do what you want to do. Yeah, try it, right?
Yeah, that's, and I came back at 5 and she was still pushing them through the whole thing.
Excellent.
The most difficult part of that was how the hell do you operate seal-a-meals? It's not exactly they have
it's
any...
It's not intuitive, right?
Yeah, it's not at all. It's place this down and hold the thing and then it makes a really... click, right, and then when the green light goes off, and I'm unfamiliar with this technology. There should be some LCD screen that says how much is coming.
It wasn't quite advanced enough for
right.
It,
yeah,
excellent.
So,
wow.
Well, that's
sausage and tenderloin and bacon is what is what we've done so far. But we're curing two of them for prosciutto.
Sure,
which was. Again, another funny thing. My wife's like, "Oh, we're gonna make prosciutto because father-in-law has a really nice wine cellar. It's perfect for
temperature and dry it out nicely."
Exactly. And I'm like, oh, cool. That's great. Like, and so like, when are we going to eat it? And she's like, I don't know, like 18 months or 24.
Like, son of a bitch.
Like, two goddamn years, right, honey? I mean, seriously, is that really?
You got to get two more pigs in the docket, right?
Going
you got to get
it on the thing, yeah. And she's like, but just think of it. For like, in 2 years, we'll have like as much prosciutto as we can eat. I mean,
hey,
I'd like some prosciutto today.
It's all part of the experience.
And here's what's crazy about that too, right? Okay, so we kill the pig, we harvest it, we cut the leg off, right? We got it in the salt, stuff like that, right? For 2 years, we could still fuck this up.
Yeah,
I might lose the leg, if I don't monitor the temperature right, right, if I don't look at it right, if it seems funky.
So the diligence you have to impart for that pig carries on, just like three the giving
years.
That it's providing you.
I mean, it'll be 3 years before I can actualize part of its leg.
Which is interesting. Throughout these conversations, we've kind of talked about the network and the energies that are all tied together and the respect. Portia and Hamlet, in a manner of speaking, will live on for 3 years while you're curing the leg, and you still have to care for them the same level of attention and desire that you did previously.
I know, it sounds almost like a eulogy. Like, you know, every day when I go to the park, I will see that oak tree that you like slept under. We should check the leg. Does the leg look okay? You know, what's the temperature like in the wine cellar? Right. Like, what's the...
That's the a viewpoint that no farmer has ever provided.
If there's a word that, you know, sort of just is in the front of my brain, it's respect, right?
Yeah.
And it's full circle, 360 degrees. It's just about respect. And it doesn't matter if it's an animal or if it's vegetables. It really doesn't even matter. It's just all about respect.
I think that's a great way to close out with this segment. Johnny, thank you so much. We could go on for hours, and we're going to have you back.
This is so awesome.
Yeah.
Great discussion.
I would love
to. Even those individuals who don't typically engage in the discussion about killing animals for food or are a little uneasy about it.
It's happening right now.
Yeah.
I think they can appreciate some of the lessons and the values that this conversation provided. I mean, at the minimum, the discussion you have with your family and son prior to the process just really rings with a lot of weight for me. So I want to thank you for being part of the show tonight.
Oh, dude, it was
a great time.
Man, I had such a good time. I can swear on this mic.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really nice.
For those of you, if you want to find more out about Johnny and Elizabeth and their operation at Rio Gozo Farm, make sure to go to their Facebook page, Rio Gozo. You can find them at riogozofarm.com. Also, they put out some really cool pictures through Instagram.com/riogozofarm. Follow them at Twitter, Rio Gozo.
Yeah,
anything you want
to
do, they've got the platforms. Lots of great information. You guys put recipes up on your blog with every CSA box and every bit of produce that comes off of your farm. I endorse them. It's been a great discussion. Michael,
thank you.
Yeah.
We're not going to go away, though. We're going to take a couple-minute break.
Oh, boy. All
one
right.
of our listeners, Tuff, he wants to know a little bit more about your operation specifically and kind of what it took to get started and if someone was interested in going down the path you've taken on. What that takes. And Johnny, we want to keep you on for some feedback as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I'd love to stick around.
It's been a great opportunity for our listeners to engage. So when we come back from the Butcher's Block, we're going to talk about what it took to get this butcher shop running. So stay tuned.
This has been From the Butcher's Block, broadcasting from the Ventura Meat Company in Ventura, California. You can find past shows at everybodyshungry.org/butchersblock and through iTunes. Follow us on social media through the hashtag Butcher's Block Show.